every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Questions. I'll be the teacher, you could be the lesson. I'll be the preacher, you be the confession. I'll be the quick relief to all you stressing. It's a thin line between love and hate. Is you really real or is you really fake? I'm a soldier standing on my feet. No surrender and I won't retreat. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
I'm the host of Basketball Friday Night in Westbrook.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Brother to Brother. This is Dr. Nathaniel Chapman. I'm here with Dr. Keelan Hinton. And we're going to be getting started here in a bit. Let's just do some, disclaimers. What we say, the things that we speak about here, our opinions solely belong to us. They don't represent Marshall University. They don't represent WMUL, the radio station, any of its affiliates, or its employees. These opinions belong solely to us. So listen at your own risk, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are listening to this live or on podcast again. Peace and blessings to everyone out there. We want to always thank you all for continuing to support the show, continuing to, giving us the freedom and listening to our opinions and ideas and perspectives and being open to them as well as we are open to your opinions, ideas, and perspectives as well. So we just would like to thank you for the support again. For those that would like to participate, you can catch us at Mahogany Love and Light in the live chat room, or you can contact us via email at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's B, the number 2, B, P-S-Y-C-H at gmail.com. Okay? So again, as always, thank you. And I guess let's go ahead and get started and let's rock and roll.
Let's rock and roll.
So, topic for the day, something that we discussed, we slowly started to discuss the other day, and we said we need to wait and talk about that on air, is we started to talk about education and the state of education in America. The state of education in America, as well as, is education still the great equalizer, so to speak? In order to make it, in order to be successful, in order to quote unquote be somebody, mm-hmm. is going to school, is going to college necessary? Again, is education the great equalizer? But first and foremost, what we wanted to discuss was, what's going on with education in America, in the system? We are when it comes to the math and sciences as compared to other countries in the world, I want to say that we're not even in the top 10. I don't even know if we're in the top 15. And the question is, what's happening? What's the problem? And can this be fixed? So I'll let you start out. What are some thoughts that you may have first and foremost before we get to going?
Well, I guess before we go there, in terms of like where we're at with education and comparing us globally, I want to just talk about what do we define, how do we define education, and, you know, what do we think it looks like? How should it look? I know that's a philosophical question, but I think it's a place we're starting. And so if you don't know us, if you're just listening for the first day, we're educators. So, you know, we both have doctorate degrees. So you might think, you may even think this whole point of discussion could be contradictory because, well, we got our degrees. But I want to look at it deeper, kind of think about where is education, not just in the college system, but in the secondary. And do we think it's fulfilling its purpose, or?
I guess the question is, what is the purpose of education? And personally, I think that I don't know if all educational systems are built to do the same thing.
Okay.
I don't know if all schools and all systems, I think there are some systems that are put together to make leaders, and I think that there are some systems that are put together to make followers. That's what
like
I think.
State systems, or?
I think state systems, I think universities. I think that, one, I don't think that we all seem to receive the same level of education.
Okay.
If you look at curriculum in West Virginia, you look in curriculum where I'm from in Tennessee, and you look at curriculum in New York or Connecticut, kids are probably learning vastly different things.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is why? And the question is, if we all have very different level and quality of teachers, quality of education, and we're learning different things, how can we honestly say that we all have the same opportunity to become the same things?
Yeah, that's a good point.
To achieve the same things. If the level of education, the quality of education, and the quality of teacher isn't the same across the board,
mm-hmm.
How can we say... This goes back to something that I talked about before when we talk about choice. I think what's confusing is people believe, I think that when we talk about where we end up in life, I think it's complicated. People believe that we all go to school, we all have teachers, we all have books, we all have the same opportunities. And if you didn't make it, that's your fault, because we all go to school, we all had an education, you didn't choose education, or you just wasn't as smart as me.
Yeah.
And we don't pay attention to how very different educational opportunities are and quality of teacher.
Well, and I think that's important. And I'd like to hear, if we happen to have any listeners that might be, you know, you teach elementary, you teach middle school, you teach high school, your thoughts on that. You know, when I used to teach high school in Florida, well, I remember when I first moved to Florida, one of the things that was said, I don't remember, you know, I can't even remember where this is coming from, but it's just something I remember hearing, like, oh, well, the education, the public education further south you go is different than it is in north. I don't know if it's true or not. But this is just kind of things you would hear. And certainly resources are different across different schools.
Yeah.
So when I was teaching there, you know, your school would basically get graded. You know, I don't fully even understand what the criteria was to determine what grade you get, you know, like a regular grade, A through F. My understanding was, though, if your school graded higher, you got more resources.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because if you think about it, there must be some reasons that your school is grading lower, but that means you're not going to get as many resources because of how you graded, which is still going to affect the kids that go to the school.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, so let's discuss some of the things that play a part in what makes schools successful and what can make schools challenging. I think that's one of them is teachers being put in a position that they have to teach to the test, mm-hmm. whatever the standardized test is. And like you said, is there some sort of mechanism that rewards schools that kids test high?
There is.
So if there is, does that put me in a position as an educator to teach to the test and to not necessarily teach the things that I think these kids need? And what sort of compromising position does that put educators in, mm-hmm. to know that if we don't test well, we won't get certain funds, we won't get certain resources? Does that put me in a, I can remember years ago, this teacher scandal broke out in Atlanta, where all of these teachers were basically changing tests to some degree. They were helping kids when they were taking standardized tests, or they was changing tests, and they found out. These teachers lost their license and just all kinds of stuff, all kinds of crazy stuff happened. And they were looked at, and people talked about them as if they were bad people, but it's kind of like, when you put people in that position to feel like, I'm not saying it was right.
Right.
I'm saying it's important that we think about the nuances. Mm-hmm. When we put people in the position to say, I want to help my students and I need resources to help them, but the reason that they may not be testing the way that they should or the way that they can or reaching their maximum potential is because we don't have resources. So they're already at a disadvantage, and they're going to do bad on this test, which means we still not going to get the resources. Does that put people in a position to do something that they probably, to make compromising choices that they probably wouldn't normally make? Again, yeah. I'm not saying it's right.
Right.
I'm just saying I think life is complicated.
Yeah. Well, and I think you bring to a bigger point. So there's the system, you know, whether it's a, you talk about public education, and then you think about how that varies from state to state. It varies from district to district. And then there's the difference between what's happening in a public school and the private schools and the charter schools. And then the whole illusion that, hey, when you come out, we all have learned the same thing.
Yeah.
But also the very real consequence of being part of a public school system and the funding and what happens with those funding, these things are not equally distributed. People don't really, if you're not part of the system, you probably don't pay as much attention to that because you don't have to. But so if we're saying the equalizer is just get an education, go get an education. Start with school. Some people kind of know this is why they take the money and pay for their kid to go to private school. I'm not saying I'm a product of public school. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with public school, but there's going to be some differences. I'll give you an example, right? So I got the opportunity. I told you I taught high school in Florida, and that was an inner city school. Shout out, Bulls. But I also got a chance to teach here, like doing a dual enrollment in a private school.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what the differences were. Well, some of them. Good kids in each school. One difference I noticed, though, was when I went into the bathroom in these private schools, there's quotes telling me I can be all I can be. Dream and all of this stuff. These things may seem silly, but the aesthetics are set up with this mindset like, hey, you can be all you can be. And I'm not saying the aesthetics at this other school were horrible, but there was a difference.
Yeah.
There's got a stark difference between those two things.
Yeah.
And that's just an example of resources and how they can be used.
Yeah. And to piggyback off that, like, as a student, seeing the resources and the effort and the energy that those around you and the emphasis that those around you place in your education helps shape the way you think about education and how important education will become to you. When you see, for kids that go to inner city schools that may not have enough desks, that have old textbooks, that might not have enough textbooks. Why should I care about education? Why should I care about learning when they don't even care to get us a nice desk? They don't even care to get us enough desk. They don't even care enough to get us good books. They don't care enough to get us updated books. Why should I care? And the people around me don't care enough to get me the things that I need to be competitive or to compete. So I think that all of those things send a message to kids to some degree or another. But again, it's insane how we just assume that people live the way we live.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We assume that everybody has a fair shake. Everybody has a fair opportunity. And if you didn't make it, then that's because you didn't work hard enough. It's not because you didn't have the resources. Everybody. I told you before, I blame TV.
You blame TV?
I blame Dangerous Minds. I blame Dangerous Minds. I blame Finding Forrester. I blame, what's the movie Hilary Swank was in? She saved the Hispanics.
What's that called?
Freedom Riders.
Yeah,
Freedom Riders.
Yeah.
I'm not saying those things don't happen, but the reality is the best teachers go to the suburbs and the private schools and schools with resources. And sometimes, and I mean no disrespect, there are great teachers. There are great teachers all the way around. And there are good teachers in the inner city. I had some really good teachers in Memphis. Shout out. You know what I'm saying? But the fact of the matter is, the best teachers go to the best schools with the best resources. And sometimes you get what's left. Now, I know that sound bad. And I'm not saying that, again, no disrespect to anybody teaching in the inner city. You know what I'm saying? But I'm saying, there are good teachers in inner cities. There are good teachers in public education. But again, these are hard conversations that we had to have.
Yeah. I mean, I think, okay, so I taught in the inner city. I think there were plenty of good teachers there. Sometimes it is hard to recruit in those areas. I remember when I was teaching, we had a lot of Teach for America teachers that were coming, which is great. They're doing this service.
And I apologize. Maybe that's a better way to say it. It's just harder to recruit in some of those areas.
Right. Yeah. And I think on top of that, even when you have a good teacher, there's the resource issue. It's not just the resources that are there for the student, it's the resources that are there for that instructor. Yeah.
How many teachers buying supplies out of their pocket, like, and they make peanuts already as it is.
Right. Or having 2 and 3 jobs and like, well, I can go ahead and do this somewhere else. Or I can go into industry. You know, some people start out saying that they want to be a teacher and have other skills. You know, teachers can do a whole bunch of other things maybe, and they just decide to do something else. But I think that's part of it. But the other issue is just that there's a system thing that is just different. Besides the system thing, it's like, even if we're saying the test scores are different from place to place, why is the test score a thing? Why is it that the standardized test is going to be determined not only who gets funding, but why is that the bar?
Yeah. And you asking the wrong person. Because I already believe that test scores are just meant to weed people out in the first place. Testing, I think that test exposure, and don't necessarily test potential. They test information that you've been exposed to, and they test a skill. Like, I think test taking is a skill that you learn.
Oh, it's definitely a skill.
And it's a skill that's not taught a lot of places. A lot of places don't teach you how to take tests, how to analyze and break down questions. Like, that is a specific skill, I think, that's not taught in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
One of my former students is from New York. He just so happened to be Vietnamese. He's talking about within the Vietnamese community in New York. He talked about all the time how we're taught test taking as a skill of how to take a test from a very early age.
Smart.
And he was like, that's why we always at the top. He was like, we are always at the top of the totem pole when it comes to test taking, and our scores is we're taught from the time we can crawl and walk and talk how to take tests. And like, it's a muscle and it's a skill that you develop, and how, you know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just think that tests a lot of times are But you know me, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I think a lot of times it's used to weed people out.
Well, you know, I know you are a conspiracy theorist. I love a good conspiracy. But, I mean, when I think about how the first intelligence test was created, some will argue that it was created to weed out, you know. But nay, they created that test in order to figure out, not to overstress the French system, to figure out who they should use education resources on. Then they found other ways to use it. But that was the initial reason.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, people have different opinions on tests, but I'm saying, how does that really fit into the goal of education? Are we defining education by test?
You ask a good question. What is our goal? I think that systems have goals, mm-hmm. and I don't think that the goal of all systems are the same. Do you think, I love my students here. I love what we do. But I go crazy when I hear my students say, you know, I'm here to get a degree, to get a job. And I'm satisfied if I could just pay my bills and I can make it and live comfortably, I'm satisfied. And said no man at Harvard ever.
Right.
Like, there's I wonder if there are systems that are put in place to build leaders, and there are systems that are put in place to build followers, and then there are systems that are put in place to build ditch diggers.
And holders of debt. I mean,
and that's a whole another.
I'm just saying, but like, obviously we believe in education and we wouldn't be educators.
Yeah, of course.
But the student that comes who's just like, look, I'm just trying to get to the job. You can't knock it. You recognize the hustle.
Yeah.
Right? You recognize that this is what this student has been told. But I think that what probably frustrates both of us about that to some degree is, well, we're not totally frustrated. We understand people want to work. People need to eat. But also, it's not about education anymore. It's about means to an ends.
Yeah.
But sometimes people start on this road to means to the ends and end up, it's not just about debt. We're not going to just go into a whole debt window, but they don't complete because the reason they started in the first place was to get a job. They get a job in between.
Yeah.
And then that's all they need, or whatever reason, something comes up. But it's not really about education.
Yeah. I'm starting to find that more and more of I was just talking to somebody earlier. Just, I think that students are changing. I bumped into a friend earlier. And he's retired, and I asked him how he was doing. He said he's loving retirement, and he said, you know, I wish I could go back and teach. He said, but I ain't that bored yet. You know, he's talking about retirement. We was joking. We just talking about how students have changed over time. And I get a lot of students that will vocally tell me they don't care. I just want this grade so I can get this degree, so I can get this job. Like, I really don't care about learning or what you got to say. I really don't. And I wonder how much of that is not their fault, but it's our fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, somewhere along the way, we forgot to teach them why learning for the sake of learning is important. And it's hard. I think it's hard to help kids and people and students understand just why knowing for the sake of knowing is dope, is because we're always constantly slicing and dicing and trying to separate and trying to find the gifted kids and the smart kids and trying to get the kids that we think have problems out of the room so they won't slow us down. Like, we're so, like, we spend so much effort and so much energy into slicing them and dicing them up. Hey. And weeding them out, and we start this weeding out process of kids at a very early age.
Again.
That we never, I think it's our fault. If kids don't care, I think a larger part of it is because we never taught them why they should care, and they don't see a lot of us care.
Right. I think, again, just go back to 1905's Binet. Look up the beginning of the intelligence test and you'll see that. But I think the other thing is, think about how preschool goes, right? I think probably in terms of how learning goes, learning can be fun across the lifespan, but probably the most fun when you're an infant and you're just doing it and you're not really getting a grade. You're trying to learn how to walk and talk, and that's learning that's encouraged by what you achieve by meeting those milestones. But then when we get you into school, we start with the gold stars and the who's the top of the class. And, you know, even like first grade classes have a top of the class.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want this to seem like I'm like, hey, everybody gets trophies. That's not where I'm at either.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, when it comes to learning and it comes to, you know, people expanding their mind, why does there have to be a rank and order? And I think part of that is part of the system, right? We have admissions process. We have how people get in. Not everybody can get in. There's not enough resources. We have to figure out those things. Even to get into college, it's like that. Unless you go to a community college, there's a process because of resources, all this stuff and that. And if we're wondering how come the youngsters growing up in this world have kind of lost this love for education, maybe it is more systematic. Maybe it is because we've been just offering gold stars and carrots, and that's what we've been reinforcing.
I think a part of it is American culture, American capitalistic competitive culture. You know what I mean? Like, if we don't have a top of the class and everybody comes and everybody learns and everybody hugs and kisses, then that's moving away from the sentiment or idea that the smartest person and the person that works hardest should be rewarded more. I think that that is the basis and foundation of America, capitalism.
If somebody's got to win, somebody's got to lose.
Yeah, and the person that should win is the person that's the smartest and or works hardest. Now, that's not what research shows. Research shows that what matters more is not how hard you work or what degree you have, but who you know. That's a whole other conversation for another day. But that is, research is definitive on that. Like, those that have connections or nepotism, connections, and who you know, those things are just as important, if not more important, than how hard you work in life. It's a lot of dope articles and a lot of really, really good stuff out there about that. But again, the idea is that if you're smarter or you work harder or if you're talented, you should be able to make more and have more than those that don't. And maybe that is the problem.
Well,
but then we get into communism and socialism.
Okay,
and that's another conversation for another day too.
Well, okay, but this brings me to we're still on the same, for y'all that are following us, we're still on the same track. We're going deeper. What about grades? Where do grades fit in the spectrum of education?
Well, the purpose of grades is to show that you've retained something. That's supposed to be the purpose of it, is that I tried to teach you something.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of what percentage or how much of what I gave you can you give back to me? And the person that could give me the most back or can articulate it in some specific way, the person that could give me the most back, they're the people who did best. Mm-hmm. And because you did best and you could give me the most back, maybe that means that and you can show that on a consistent basis. That you can go into a room, someone can give you something, and you can give them the most back consistently. That means that obviously, that means you're smarter than those others. And you should be rewarded for that. You'll be rewarded with the job. You're somebody I would like to work with because there are massive amounts of information to do this engineering job, or to be a doctor, or to be a lawyer, or to do whatever. And you've consistently shown me this grade is a reflection of how much can you retain and give back. So I think that probably is the point of what grades should be or what they should mean. But then again, the question is an A in Tennessee the same as an A in New York, as the same as an A in Florida? So this is why we have to have a standardized test.
Listen,
because we know that an A, to some degree, we think that an A one place is not the same level as an A another place. But there's this one test that everybody got to take that's going to equal everybody out. everybody has to take the LSAT. Everybody has to take the MCAT. Everybody has to take the ACT. Now, that will show us how much you really know. Now, whether those tests are biased in some way, again, is another question.
But okay. So you're getting into some good stuff here. But okay. So even with the LSAT or the ESPP, Examination for Professional Psychologists, which I had to take, y'all. Even with those things, they're very specific to their area. I still have some doubts about the whole ESPP. But you can argue that for LSAT. You can argue that for these exams that go for professionals. But what about exams, these ones that, like, in Florida, it's FCAT. So it's the Florida Comprehensive. I don't remember what they, but it's basically, that's what every person, you know, that's what they're going to be taking in Florida. Who's determining what should be the common for that when it's a broad area? It's different when it's like a profession. And who gets to determine that anyways?
Good point. I agree. And that's what makes those tests trash. And that's what makes those tests biased, is that somebody somewhere sits and decides what kids should know at a certain point. And they consider what's important and what's not and what's useful and what's not. When we look at information on culture and education, which is clear, we got 30 years, at least 30 years of information that shows communities and families and culture, all of those things play a part in the mean, how you make meaning of what you read, how you make meaning of what you write, how you process information. And who's to say, again, this is why diversity is important. Like, there isn't, again, it's like, I just think that culture plays such an important part and such an important role in how you think and how you process information. You know what I'm saying? Culture exposure, cultural background, like, all of those things play an important part. Again, I was just talking about Smagorinsky earlier. I always tell people to look up Peter Smagorinsky. They ask me to make up that name. That's his real name. He's a linguist, and he talks about culture and language and education and how culture plays a part in how we make meaning of what we read, how we interpret what we read, and how what we write. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, especially if you're not a part of somebody's culture, do you have the cultural background and foundation to understand why they make meaning of the world the way that they do? And if I'm not from the same background as you, I just mark stuff off because it seems and feels like nonsense. Mm-hmm. But when somebody is from a culture, you understand why people write the way they write, why they pay attention to what they pay attention to, why they reflect on things the way they reflect on things. So with those tests, the question is, who's making the test? And is that a part of the reason why certain cultures a lot of time don't test well, because the people who are making the test don't understand their cultural perspectives, don't understand their cultural way of thinking, don't understand their cultural way of processing information? Like, I think that is probably a larger part of the problem.
Yeah.
But that's just me. But again, that's why, you know, that's why diversity and having diverse, and I don't just mean just having black people. I mean women. I mean Scottish people, Polish people, Irish people. Like, having diversity is so, so very, I think that's why it's so very important.
Yeah. Well, and I go back to this grade thing for a second. I know you talked about how you gave everybody a synopsis of how it's going to lead to standardized tests. And that makes sense, because we got to equalize things and make sure that everybody's on the same, you know, playing field. As a psychologist, I can understand that. But I guess even when we go back to these grades for a second, as you were mentioning, in one state, they might be different. Or even if you're in the same state, even if you teach a class here at this university or some university, two classes are going to be taught in different ways. And so therefore, the grades are going to be different. But regardless, you could have, I hear people say all the time, well, you know, so-and-so, because I read recommendation letters, they really did excellent in my class. And my class was like one of the hardest, blah, blah, blah. Right.
Yeah.
Maybe it was. I don't know. But the point is, even if they get an A in your class, does that even mean that they've been educated?
Good point. The question is, what did you teach? And like I said, one person's rigor is nothing to somebody else somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think that's another point of standardized tests. And I'm not saying I'm supporting standardized tests. I'm saying I think that that's why people give standardized tests, is try to weed out people who have, to try to really try to weed out people who don't belong. Quote unquote, don't belong. Okay, so you went to some school in the inner city and you got straight A's. Okay, we're going to see how smart you are. Can you take this test? And if you can't, then that obviously means that those grades that you got from the inner city school at X, Y, and Z really just inflated, and they really didn't teach you nothing.
Which is unfortunate for a number of reasons. One, because whatever your metric is that you're using to say that this person is quote-unquote smart is based on whatever you and a group of people have decided is. It doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, even if we just use one established model of thinking, Gardner's, yeah. multiple forms of intelligence, basically says, well, you know, you could be, he doesn't ask the question, how smart are you? He asks the question, how are you smart? So one kid might be good with numbers, so they would be the logical type. One might be good at recognizing tunes and tones, and that would be the musical type. I mean, one might be good sports and dancing, and they would be the kinesthetic type. But not all of those types are even covered in this test that we're going to see if you can be good enough to get into
exactly.
our program.
That's the way we define intellect, the way we define intelligence is academics and books. You know, I give a good example. Years ago, we had a storm here in Huntington years ago, and it was bad. Electricity went out everywhere, and I went to I had a conference in Martinsburg, and when I was coming through, I think I stopped at a place called Big Otter, West Virginia, right? The electricity was out at this gas station. People were sitting around. I was like, man, this looked like this is about to be a riot. Like, there was no electricity. Everybody standing there with credit cards. Maybe 5 minutes later, these dudes pull up in these big trucks, like with dead deer. In the back of all these supplies and stuff. They walk in the store with hands full of wads full of cash. They get what they need. They give it to the guy at the counter. They say, keep the change, and they walk out. And I was like, wow, who's at the top of the food chain now? Like, what's intelligent is what's relative. Like intelligence is relative. And when there's no electricity, like your quote unquote your fancy college, your fancy education can't save you now.
Right.
So the question is, who's at the top of the food chain? Like, if there's an apocalypse tomorrow, the dean gonna be in trouble, because the dude that can build a shed out back, that's gonna be who at the top of the chain. The guy who knows how to rig up something and make electricity. Like I said, what's right, what's smart, and what's not. It's relative depending on context.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like you said, intelligence is more than what we think. But when we think of intelligence, we think of what you can do, how much you can read, how much you can memorize and speak back, how people speak. That's one of the biggest mistakes that people make. People just assume because somebody don't speak because they don't speak the King English that like that they aren't smart.
Right.
And that's the furthest thing from the truth. So I don't know. We up on a break real quick. We need to take a break. Again, this is Dr. Hinton and Dr. Chapman, and we are starting this series just sort of picking apart and thinking about education. And we'll talk about, again, what are some of the problems and issues that we think kids face in the educational system in America. What's right with education in America, and what's wrong with education in America? Why are we not in the top 10? What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? As well as, you know, are there different systems in different places? Are there school systems that are put and built together purposefully to educate leaders? And then are there other systems that are put together to educate workers? And the question is, what type of system do we live in? What type of system do you live in? Yeah, so
when we come back from break, we'll take a look at the board. So, well, during the break, if you want to add some comments or you have some questions, you happen to be an educator, this would be a good time for you to add those comments.
Be right back.
The Marshall women's basketball team aims to take Conference USA by storm during the 2019-2020 season.
And Mayo drills a triple from 25 feet away.
Head coach Tony Kemper expects for his team to continue the growth it experienced last season, with many key contributors returning.
Mayo back to Kadasia Brooks for three and a tie, and Kadasia Brooks knocks it down from the wing.
Several new members of the team hungry for playing time.
Sibyls to Wheeler. Wheeler along three. She got it to go, and Marshall's got the lead.
On Thursday, Marshall will take on FIU with tip-off scheduled for 7 p.m. On Saturday, the Herd will battle FAU with tip-off scheduled for 2 p.m. The pregame programs for both games will begin 30 minutes prior to tip-off.
Catch all the action right here on the official radio home for Marshall Women's Basketball, the Cutting Edge Sports Radio Network.
Welcome back. Welcome back. We're going to take a look at the board. Hopefully Pod Beam is working. What we got?
I know they was. I know they had some issues as of late. So we'll just rock and roll, and if something pops up, we'll move on and move forward. So again, where should we start?
I think we should start just exploring our opinions on why education became a big deal in America. Like, why did people put so much emphasis on it in the first place? You know, we call it the Great Equalizer, but before it was an equalizer, it was a big deal. People created these colleges and ivory towers and made this a thing that people need to do in order to be a part of the who's who.
Yeah. I think a part of it, education, was we wanted systems to help give people skills so they could be productive in society. And I think a larger part of it is the country was becoming, okay, why did education become what we call compensatory and obligatory, meaning everybody had to go, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think that we had a lot of immigrants coming here, Scottish and Polish and Irish people. We had black people here as well, but there were white Anglo-Saxons, and they had Scottish and Polish and Irish people that came here, and they wouldn't leave. So, and that's a story that a lot of people don't talk about is, you know, when Scottish and Polish and Irish people got here and Hungarian people, like, they got it. Like, that's a whole plight of its own. That's a whole another show of its own. Like, they was treated pretty poorly, too. And I wonder if the white Anglo-Saxons, white people that was here, that was like, man, these people won't leave. Okay, if they gonna stay, then we need to make sure that they have our goals, our values, and our beliefs.
That's interesting.
So a part of the reason that school became compensatory and obligatory is it's a socialization process as well. This is how we're going to give you our version of history. We're going to give you what we want you to know. We're going to give you the goals and values and beliefs that we think that you need, that if we can't kick you out of here because y'all too strong, we can't kick you out of here. So how can we integrate you into our society and give you our values? So I think that school, that's one of a myriad of purposes,
yeah,
and reasons that education became a larger part of education. I think is a socialization process. When you was in the kindergarten in the first grade, the first thing you did every morning to start the day was to do what?
Pledge allegiance.
Why? What did you learn from that? Nothing.
To pledge my allegiance.
Yeah. I mean, nothing. And again, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Right. He's not anti-American.
Yeah, yeah. No, not at all. You know, I love America. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I'm saying it's what it is. It's a socialization process. It trains and ingrains you to think a certain way. Yeah. It's what it is. You know what I'm saying? So I think that a larger part of the educational system has... Yes, it was to give people skills and tools to be useful in society, but I also think that it's a socialization process. It is the place that not just America, but schools and school systems are the places that countries and nations give its people its goals, its values, and its beliefs that they want, that the system and that country and that nation wants you to have.
I think that's very interesting. I mean, I think that's a real interesting point. When you think about either whether you think about secondary or post-secondary, you think about elementary and that level, you definitely can see that. Because think about it. That's a good point with the Pledge of Allegiance or just the different rituals you do. It's not just about reading, writing, and arithmetic when you're elementary. You're learning how to be a good citizen. That's part of it is citizenship.
Socialize,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what's even more interesting about that, if you think about, you talk about immigrants, and you can also think about the plight earlier on, right? Earlier on when blacks were still enslaved, it was outlawed. We weren't able to be educated for some of us, it was like, this is our way to be a part, you know, like reading by night when we could be killed for educating ourselves and what it meant outside of the system. Just to have that knowledge and to be able to use that knowledge, even though it was dangerous.
Yeah.
And I think probably at the core, when education, when whoever created it, maybe there was some of that, like, you know, it was this knowledge and the whole philosophical idea. But I think somewhere along the way, somebody puppeteered it a bit.
Yeah.
And like, it started out maybe possibly with a noble idea, and then it became more of a process and system. And that's when the towers start to get built and only certain people can get in. I mean, there's been a change of, let's try to make it more available to other people as time has went on, but that's not how it started.
Yeah, agreed. And that's what I mean by, and then I think a part of what happened was, as time went on, people that were seen as successful went through the system, went through an educational system of some sort. The whole point, I've met people in D.C. I've met homeless people on a park bench in D.C. that were smarter than me and you put together, that were smarter than any PhD. So the question is, why do you have to go to school? Like, what a degree says is someone like me, what a degree says is you think like me.
Mm.
And someone like me educated and trained and ingrained you to think like me. And this is why I trust that I can hire you. This is why I trust I can work with you. This is why it's safe for me to work with you and have you around me, is because someone just like me stamped and approved the fact that you think, that they taught you to think just like me. They taught you to think about the world the same way that I do. That's really what a degree is all about.
Well, I think that people should absorb that for a second, because really, for them to absorb it, I think they should picture themselves at a graduation. So, you know, May is coming up. It's not too far away. You'll go to a graduation. Doesn't matter if it's high school or if you go to a college graduation. What you'll see is regalia. Right? I don't know if you take time to really learn about the regalia. It's kind of interesting. But you'll see people in, like, hoods and garments. And basically, these are the masters of knowledge. And the masters of knowledge have imparted this on you. And now the master of knowledge, the biggest master of knowledge, is going to give you your degree and confer that for you. So like you're saying, they've gotten the golden stamp by the institution, by the establishment. And we know that says something about probably what they're going to be like with us.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think that's, here we go. So when we look, there has always been this thing that people have looked at degrees from HBCUs or historically black colleges and universities differently.
Mm-hmm.
Why? It's because I don't know if they teach you to think like me. Are you like me? Have you been socialized? Have you been trained and ingrained to think like me? Because we didn't put our stamp on those schools, on those universities. There are a few, the Howards, shout out, Tuskegee, Hampton Institute, which is Hampton University, Hampton Institute. Like, there are a few big names, but...
You're not going to say Spelman?
Spelman and Morehouse, of course. But they have always been questioned. What's interesting is I would even hear people in our community talk about HBCUs as if there was something wrong with those degrees, because again, they like I said, the whole purpose of a degree is you think like me, and this is your stamp that you think like me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know,
I think that's another interesting point, because it's like the whole reason an HBCU exists is because we're being shut out.
Yeah.
Like, that's why it exists. Like, it's like, no, you can't go to school. Okay, well, we just have to make our own school. And that's like, forgot about.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that some of the best and brightest black minds in the world went to HBCUs after
historically black colleges.
Yeah. For historical black colleges and universities. Some of the best and smartest and brightest black minds in the world, literally in the entire world, went to HBCUs until desegregation. Desegregating, maybe this, again, this brings up a, when we talk about education, it actually, I think it was the catalyst for the downward spiral of a lot of HBCUs. Because what happened was, after desegregation, then a lot of that talent started going to white universities. Yeah. Start going to white universities.
PWI is a predominantly white institution.
Yeah. Start going to white. But I mean, there were a lot of things that changed after desegregation. Like, again, I think I said on here before, my grandmother used to tell me that when neighborhoods were segregated, you had the black doctor stay next door to the black lawyer, stay next door to the black dentist, stay next door to the black construction worker. Everybody lived together, and kids was like, I want to be like the doctor, I want to be like the lawyer. And then after desegregation, and people could move out, the doctor and the lawyer moved out, and who was left? So I'm not saying that desegregation was a bad thing. I'm saying they're byproducts to everything. And I think, I wonder, don't quote me, but I'm just, this is me again, and for those that are listening, we don't have anything written down when we come in here. This is just all organic thought. So if I say something wrong, you know, my apologies. It's just sort of us on the fly trying to solve problems in the midst of thinking of these questions. So after desegregation, I wonder, is that where that downward spiral started, where HBCU started to suffer financially? You know what I'm saying? Because they couldn't compete financially with white institutions. It's something to think about. You know, it's like I said, and maybe that's another conversation for another day. But that's just something to think about.
Well, I think just not just with HBCUs, but just if you think about when desegregation happened, the importance of it in the public education systems, and how hard it was initially when it first happened, the implications for education overall, or if you think about the research that was done with Mammy and Kenneth Clark about what the implications were for not having it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, that Kenneth and Mamie Clark, that's another conversation for another day. But then, moving forward. So what's going on with education in America? Why are we, 15 or 20th in science and 25th in math, and like, what's happening? I think that when you look at research, it shows that when it comes to advanced degrees, everybody comes here to get a PhD. Like, we do well. Like, we make PhDs like nobody's business. Like, we make some of the best, like, our graduate schools and the PhDs that we make are amazing. But a lot of what we find is that, and I think it's a cultural thing, people come here, get their degrees, and leave. But what's happening in primary school and secondary school, like what's happening that we're not competing? We don't focus, and maybe we don't focus on math and sciences the way we should. We still giving kids the summer off for the harvest. And for those that don't know, the reason that your kids get the summer off is because they would give kids the summer off to help their parents harvest crops. That's the reason that kids continue to have the summer off now. And plenty of research has shown that kids lose, 50% of what they've learned over that 3 or 4 month span. Like, they lose, like, almost half of what they learn. So, like, but we can't go to, and we know these things, but we can't send school kids to school year round because then you got to pay teachers more. So who gonna come up with that bread?
Yeah.
Then you got to keep the lights in, and you got to burn the air in June. Who gonna come up with that money to pay those electric bills? So it gets. I think all of the, like, these are just little things that play an important part in why our kids don't compete.
Right.
Is because, you know, they take 3 or 4 months off at a time.
Yeah, you know, but it's hard for me. I'm trying to. It's hard for me to go down that rabbit trail because I don't know that I feel like that we need to be competing. I don't know that I feel like the kids being really good at the STEM stuff, science and math, is what we need to focus on. I know there's, you know, other people would disagree, but so we're not competing. Who says we need to?
If we're not competing, what are the byproducts of not being able to compete intellectually?
See, but that's the thing to me. It's like, we're not competing.
Do we want a country?
Does that really include,
everything is global,
all encompassing of intellect anyways? I guess that's where
it's all about I think it's all about what are the byproducts. If we can't compete on a global scale now, in the next 20 to 30, 50 years, who's going to be running the world?
Okay, so if another country did run the world,
I love America, y'all, but I'm just saying. How many times do you hear people complain, and I'm not saying this for those that are listening, how many times do you hear people complain and say, well, this is just me, somebody said they were complaining about their doctors, why are the doctors not from America? Because we can't compete in the math and sciences. That's why. Now, I don't care what, you know, save me. I don't care who you are. I don't care who you are, what country, what nationality you are. We are of the same mind. Why does that matter? You know what I'm saying? But I think from a global standpoint, there are byproducts to that. You know what I'm saying? That, like, I think as a nation, we're kind of like, who's going to control and run things if we can't compete intellectually? But from a philosophical standpoint, I get it. Why do you care? Why does it matter?
And for those listening, I'm not saying that, hey, there's not some advantages to it. Obviously, there is. You know, depending on different markets, different things we do overall. But the basic question still is like, we're still running on a flawed premise to me anyways. We're fighting to be the smartest kid in the sandbox. And we're fighting over what is not truly a good definition of what's smart anyways. So we can keep doing that, but what's the point?
But the fact of the matter is that if you, to some degree, will you ever have anything if you don't conform to what it means? Like, we can live this philosophical life of, well, what does it really mean to be smart? But at the end of the day, if you're not smart, the people who conform to that idea of what it is and meet those standards get better jobs, get better salaries, have better resources. Their kids have more access to other resources. I think I'm saying that's how people view it. So it's like, you could say philosophically, what does it really matter? But let's not act like your quality of life will not be affected.
Okay. But even with that, right? So think about it. Think about the people that you know that have been really innovative and created something. I mean, true, maybe some of them were at like these elite kind of colleges and then they dropped out. But the point is, most of them, it wasn't based on these things that they were doing in school. Maybe they were at the opportunity because they were at a school where they can just say, I don't care about classes and go ahead and create this thing. But a lot of people that have been real successful, besides having all these other resources, also have done something that has been bright, that hasn't necessarily fit right under the scope of how we claim or what we claim intellect to be. When somebody's entrepreneurially minded, it's different anyways.
Yeah.
And they're still contributing to the economy, still contributing globally, all those things.
Now, what you're talking about, okay, I think we think the same thing, but we're labeling things differently. I think we need to redefine success, not intellect, but what it means to be successful. And we consider a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer to be successful. I think success has many shapes and forms. And I think that if somebody's not doing a certain thing in life, we don't view them as successful. Success is, different communities define success very differently. Like, I got friends that they get up every morning, they go to work, they can pay all their bills, they can take care of themselves, they can take care of their families. To me, where some of us come from, that is a success story. Right. You know what I'm saying? I think we have to reshape and redefine the way we look at success. We look at people. We used to look at people like, if you're just going out, if you're graduating, and you're just going to get a trade, we probably wouldn't say that you were successful. Why? You see what I'm saying? Like, we view success as people who go to college, who become doctors, who become lawyers, who become engineers. And I think that success has many different shapes and many different forms, just like intellect has many different shapes and many different forms.
Yeah.
And I think that we encourage kids to go to college for, and we ran out of time, but that's a whole another conversation for another day. I think that is a hustle. That has always been a hustle. Like, I think encouraging kids to go to college is really just encouraging folks sometimes to go and get in debt so somebody else can get paid later. But I think that we should encourage kids to find your passion. I think realistically you have to develop a skill that you can market, develop a skill that you can feed yourself with. But maybe all of us, instead of saying go to college, and pumping ideas and pushing vocations that require college.
Yeah.
Ask kids, what is it that you want to do? What is it that you like? What is it that you're passionate about? And take that route. You know, like with Mike, I got kids, and I told Mike, if you don't want to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, why go to college? And I got 3 degrees, and I'm like, why go? You know, if you don't want to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, something that just absolutely possibly requires you to go to college, get a trade and start your own business. Like, I've been big on become an entrepreneur, start a business, develop a skill that you can market and punch your own clock and write your own ticket and start a business. Like, you don't just come here just to come here to major in something and to get a degree just to say you got a degree that you can't use.
Yeah.
Or you get a skill that's not really useful in regards to, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, since we're coming up on our last few minutes, let's see if there's anything on the board.
And I think it's been something wrong with this.
Oh, something wrong. Yeah. Nothing on the board. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So anyway, this is probably going to be maybe a 2 or 3 part series that we'll probably end up doing, just sort of on education in general. Like, we want to talk about, again, what are some of the things that make it, we want to talk about, you know, shout out to all the teachers that are out there. Again, it's the second most important job in the world, you know, second to a housewife, in my opinion. No matter who you are, no matter who you become in this world, everybody got to go through a teacher. Like, that has to be the most important job. Like I said, one of the most important jobs in the world. So, again, shout out teachers. We want to talk about, we'll probably end up talking about just sort of the dynamics of educational systems. You got people who probably got the first or second most important job in the world, and you pay them peanuts. How much productivity can you get out of people when they're working? It's not an 8-hour-a-day job. It's a 24-hour-a-day job, and they're getting paid peanuts to do it. What is it? What is the average teacher stays in the job, the profession, 2 or 3 years, something like 2 or 3 years before they quit? Because it's kind of like, I can't kill myself doing this. Mm-hmm. I mean, teachers, do we know that qualify for food stamps? And like you said, got 2 and 3 jobs. So what are some of the things that just sort of play an important part in where we are, where our system is educationally? Teachers, some of the things that kids go through, bullying, like all of these different facets and all these different things that happen in our system at some point or another we want to discuss. So today was just the start of that.
Yeah.
So again, for those that, I know that the hour ended, for those that tuned in, we appreciate you. Again, this was just the start of something larger, just us trying to feel out, you know, just trying to find questions and feel out the topic. The next week or so, the next couple of weeks, we'll probably expand on this a little bit more, just education, the system, and what teachers go through, what parents go through, and what kids go through as well. Okay. So again, thank you for joining us, and peace and blessings to everybody out there that's listening. And we appreciate you continue to support us.
Yep. So definitely, we appreciate you supporting us. I want to make a couple announcements real quick. If you are in the Huntington area or want to travel to the Huntington area on March 27th and March 28th, I'll be doing a couples workshop, 7 Principles of Making a Marriage Work. You can go to 7pwv.eventbrite.com to get registration information about that. Also, earlier in that day, before that, there will be another workshop. It's mental health first aid. So mental health first aid is it's an 8-hour workshop that's similar to how you might imagine CPR, except for it's first aid for mental issues. Gives you some basic skills and ways to intervene and help people who might be having some mental health concerns. So if you want to register for that, you can go to mhfawv.eventbrite.com. That's going to be on March 27th from 8 to 4. It's 8-hour and comes with a certification from the National Behavioral Health Council. So just some closing thoughts. We started this conversation about education. We chewed through our own definitions and started to just lay the topic out for you. As you start to think about education, you know, one word that comes to me for education is to evoke. You know, we were asking some of those questions and thinking, are we doing that? You know, in the systems with grades and standardized tests, have we lost what the true hope is? I know the hope is for some people to get a job, but also it's that we teach people how to think. We evoke a passion for learning. And maybe you think about that with your own little learner that you got, whether it's your son, your daughter, if you happen to be a teacher. And I know you're about this life. That's what you're doing. But are we evoking something? Are we evoking a passion for learning and figuring out how to problem solve in the world? Because I think that is the hope of any true educator. Well, we enjoyed you, and we will talk to you soon.
Told, paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my card.